Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
I have two podcasts, this one and another one called Love and Abuse. If you have what you would consider a difficult relationship, whether it's family, romantic, or something else, head over to loveandabuse.com and it may help you determine exactly where the problem lies.
Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now.
Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani and I am here to help you increase your emotional intelligence so that you can avoid dysfunction, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and show up as your authentic self. Everything I talk about in this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. All right, to start the show, I'm going to read a quick email that came in a couple months ago, but I think it has a good point in it that I want to convey, and it's a very quick one, and I think it's from a younger person just because of the way they wrote it, but there's a couple of good points in here, actually, one that I want to address and one that I want to repeat about what this person said. So they said, "Hey, Paul, first I want to thank you for your podcast. They are helpful. Thank you. So basically, I've been seeing a boy who's very different from me. I mean, our perspectives are different. When we first met last year, I didn't notice that he had a girlfriend, but he had one, and lately he told me he broke up, and he kind of opened up about it. But when we go out, he keeps touching me and getting closer until I ask him, 'What are we doing? What are you doing?' He answered genuinely, 'Can't we just enjoy each other's company?' See, I'm not ready for a relationship or commitment. I don't want to lose you like I lost my ex. Honestly, Paul, this was and still is painful, but I realized this is me, and I'm cutting this toxic person out of my life, and if he were the right person, he wouldn't make me feel like I'm not enough. He wouldn't even make me question everything. I hope you reply on me." So I think there might be also a language barrier there, but I think I got the gist of what they were saying. First of all, thank you so much for sharing this. Thank you so much for writing. Second of all, good for you. Good for you noticing that it didn't feel right. When you're with someone else and it doesn't feel right, you have every right to back off, take a break, create some distance, or just stop seeing them. You have every right to do that. That is your right. That is your right, and it is your responsibility. It is your responsibility for you to take care of you. Not that other people can't take care of you as well, and not that it's not their responsibility if they are doing something that's uncomfortable for you, because it is up to you to say no. It is up to you to say, this doesn't make me feel comfortable. And if they don't stop, you move away, you distance yourself, or you leave and never come back. There's a lot of people listening right now that already know this, and that's awesome. But there are people out there that don't know it is your right to do this and your responsibility. I know I'm putting a challenge on you. If you find yourself in a position where you feel uncomfortable with someone else, you have every right to take care of yourself. You have every right to say, this makes me uncomfortable. I'm going to sit over here, I'm going to walk away, I'm going to leave, or don't say anything and just leave, because you are the most important person in your life, and you need to take care of that person as if they couldn't take care of themselves. I know that sounds weird,
but this is kind of how I do it. If I'm in a weird situation, if I'm uncomfortable, I might actually, in my mind, step out of myself and say, Paul, I'm going to take care of you. I got this. I'm going to take care of you. You're not going to have to deal with this. I'll take care of it. I look at that as the adult in me stepping up for me and standing up for me. So there is, whatever you want to call it, an adult, a protector, a warrior, a guard, whatever you want to call what's inside of you, you can either become that or step outside yourself and be that, if that makes sense. That sometimes I do that. Sometimes I'm in a position where I'm nervous, I'm concerned, I'm not sure how things are going to go. So I might step outside myself and say, look, I got this. So I want you to say that in your mind. I got this. Don't worry. I'll take care of this. Hey, that person's being a little too forward. I'll take care of this. Don't worry about it. It can really help. It can give you some power where you didn't think you had it before. So keep that in mind. And to the person who wrote, good for you, like I said earlier, this is something that if you are young, very good to learn it now. The younger you are when you learn this, the better your boundaries will be when you grow older. Now, there are situations where you might say no, and they might not back off. They might not let you honor yourself and protect yourself. I'm not going to get too deep into that today, but if someone becomes aggressive toward you or too forward and they're not giving up or not backing down, you might have to get out of there as soon as possible. And in this case, if this person kept touching you and they wouldn't stop, you are going to have to do something a lot more aggressive than you've been doing. Don't be afraid to not be nice. And this is a slippery slope because I could tell you that and they could hurt you. So I want you to be really careful here. A, try not to get in situations where you have nowhere to run and nowhere to go. You want to make sure you have an exit strategy. If you don't know someone too well, you don't know what they're going to do, make sure you have an exit strategy. And B, play out in your mind what you would do if they wouldn't say no. There's a lot that can happen. There are people that don't like when you honor yourself. Unfortunately, those people exist, and we have to be careful about them, and we don't want to give away our power to them. We want to keep our power, and how do we do that? We stay aware, we stay alert, we stay perceptive, and we make sure that we don't get into those situations in the first place. So if you don't know someone too well, or you think you know someone well enough, I would still say give yourself an exit plan. And I'm talking to people that really haven't experienced this yet. This may not be you. Anyone listening, this may not be you. So the people that needed to hear that, you have every right to honor yourself, protect yourself, distance yourself, separate from people that are toxic and or dangerous, and go your own way. And you don't have to give a reason why. If you feel like you're in danger, or if you're even just uncomfortable, you don't have to give a reason. You just have to honor yourself. In fact, the reasons can slow you down and can cause you to justify behavior that you already feel uncomfortable with. It's sort of like when I first met my girlfriend, we had conversations about trust. And I forget what we were talking about, but I said, you know, if I said, duck, meaning watch out, I have a feeling you'd say, why? Meaning, watch out, honey. And she would say, what? Why? And I told her that because she always seemed to question everything. I mean, there's nothing wrong with questioning everything, but there's a point where you can trust someone, and instead of saying why, you say, okay, I'll duck, or you just duck. You just watch out. If I say watch out, you should duck. You should try to get out of the way. You should cover your face. Do something, because I may not be able to get all of the words out of the way. Watch out. I just cut this tree, and it's falling near you, and it might fall on you. That might be too long to say. So watch out is look around really quick and get out of the way. I think she got that, but I don't know if she would actually do it. I don't know if she's in that space to fully trust anything anyone says, really, not just me, because she has had trust issues in the past, and she wants to know the reason why she should do something before she does it. But I think our relationship has developed over the years, so she's starting to trust me more. Hopefully
that's the case. And hopefully I never have to say, watch out. But you get what I mean. There are people out there that question why and look for the reasons when I'm telling you, don't try to find a reason or justify someone's behavior when you feel uncomfortable. Just get away for a little bit and then you can process it. Sometimes you have to do that. So to the person who wrote, thank you so much for sharing this. I'm so glad that you are getting rid of toxic people in your life. You're cutting them out. Yes, that is a good idea. If they make you feel uncomfortable, good for you. And that is a very empowering stance that you've taken. And I'm sharing this with everyone because of what you said. It's important. If you're learning this at a younger age, it is important to continue doing this behavior, honoring yourself, standing up for yourself, and moving in that direction so nobody takes advantage of you, and especially nobody hurts you. And let me just say something about the last thing you said, which is, if he were the right person, he wouldn't make me feel like I'm not enough, and he wouldn't make me question everything. Speaking of questioning everything, the two things that you said, he wouldn't make me feel like I'm not enough, you are spot on. When someone cares about you, when they support you, when they love you, not only do they make you feel like you're enough, but you're great. You're more than enough. The word enough doesn't even come into play. You're great. You are worthy. You are lovable. You are important to me. I love you. When you hear that, you have a different feeling than feeling like you're not enough. Anyone that makes you feel like you're not enough is not the right person to seek validation from. Put that on your refrigerator. Anyone that makes you feel like you're not enough is not the right person to seek validation from. Or if you want to speak grammatically correct, from whom to seek validation. So for anyone that makes you feel like you're not enough, they are not evolved enough to have a healthy relationship. That doesn't mean they can't have a relationship, and that doesn't mean they can't learn. But if they are making you feel like you're not enough, you're not worthy enough, you're not important enough, you're not lovable enough, they are the wrong person from whom to seek validation. Is that right? From which to seek? From whom? Well, no matter what, people who love you and support you will never make you feel like you're not enough. That's not how it works. That's not how relationships work. When you're with the right person, you will always feel like you are not only more than enough, but you are loved and adored and supported, and you feel like they actually care. That is important, and that is what I like to see in relationships. So I want to thank you, this person who wrote. I appreciate you. Thank you for sharing that, and I'm glad I got a chance to talk about what you said in here, because it sounds like you're on the right path and it sounds like you're going to be fine in life. And if you're not really young, and I just assumed that, then I apologize, but what I just talked about is still valid. So again, thank you. And now I'm going to read another message. This person wrote, "Hi Paul, thanks for all the great content. You are welcome. I just listened to your episode on emotional triggers. I guess I'm not as tuned into myself as I thought because I'm wondering what emotional triggers I have. What can I do to identify them?" All right, I'm going to answer that before I read on, because they asked one more question and I want to make sure I cover all of this. So you want to know how to identify emotional triggers. To me, this is a very easy thing to answer. Not that it was an easy question. It's actually a difficult question for a lot of people, but I have worked on emotional triggers for many years. I have done everything I can to eradicate mine because I really hate them. I'm talking about the negative ones. I really hate emotional triggers. When they come up, I want to know how to get rid of them. I want to know how to heal from them, how to process them, how to release them, and move on. My first piece of advice is to listen to my episodes on emotional triggers, because that's going to help you a lot. Go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com, type in the word trigger, you'll have a bunch of results. My second piece of advice is to catch it in real time. Do some real-time observation with yourself by checking in with yourself when something happens that makes you feel bad or hurt or upset. Check in with yourself and ask yourself, what just triggered me? That's really the simple step to this, is just asking yourself, what just triggered me? Let's just say that somebody came up to you and said, you don't care about me and I hate you. I mean, I hope nobody ever says that about you, but let's just say they did. You don't care about me and I hate you. If I asked you, does that trigger you? You would probably say, well, yeah, that triggers me. Why wouldn't it trigger me? That might be your first response. That reminds me of another article called Stupid Questions That Lead to Healing over at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. That's going to help too. But if you got triggered and I asked you, why did that trigger you? You would say, why wouldn't it trigger me? That would trigger anyone. If somebody came up and said, you don't like me and I hate you, or something like that, whatever I just said, that's going to trigger almost anyone. And I would say, yeah, you're probably right, but why did it trigger you? What specifically about that comment triggered you? Because when I try this on, if somebody came up and said, you know, I hate you. I hate what you do on the air. I hate the way you teach. I hate what you teach. I think you're toxic. And you should pack up and close up shop because you are bad for the world. Let's just say that happened. Oh my God, that would be quite the comment that somebody would say toward me. My first thought would be, what did I do? That would be my first place. What did I do? What did I say? What exactly did they hear me say or see me do that made them so upset toward me? So that would be my first thought. My second thought might be a feeling like, oh, that hurts. I put my heart and soul out in the air. I'm very transparent, or at least this is what I think I am. I'm very vulnerable, at least I think I am. And I just put myself out there and try to be honest with people, and I try to help. So I feel like I'm helping. I feel like I'm doing everything I can to give away as much helpful information as I can. Yet somebody says I'm being hurtful, I'm toxic. And so if I ask myself, well, what exactly about that triggers me? I think I would start with, why don't they like me? Because I would want to know why they have such animosity toward me. But I would dive into the feeling of not being liked and how that is a problem. This is where I drill down or drill into the issue. So the issue for me is, why don't they like me? Okay, let's drill into that. Let's just say they don't like you. How is that a problem? Well, if they don't like me, it's a problem because I don't think I'm putting myself out there as unlikable. And I'm still not anywhere close to the emotion or the feeling that I have, but I'm just going through some questions in my mind. Okay, let's just say that's true. I'm putting myself out there and I think I'm likable. I think I'm helping, yet this person says I'm not helping at all. In fact, I'm hurting them and others. And so I would have a feeling of maybe insecurity. I would maybe feel a little less confident. I would feel incompetent because somebody's calling me out. There's a feeling that maybe I am wrong about something. So now I'm questioning myself. I'm losing trust in myself. I'm losing trust in my ability to teach. And I'm going through this thought process, drilling in deeper and deeper inside myself to understand where this trigger comes from. What if I did give the wrong information? Now I feel like I'm to blame. Like I feel like I've been irresponsible. So now I'm getting even closer to that emotional trigger. We're not even there yet. It's just I'm getting closer and closer because I'm drilling into this. I feel like I'm to blame. I feel like I'm irresponsible. This hasn't been proven yet. They haven't proven to me that I'm wrong or hurtful, and I haven't even proven to myself that I've been hurtful. But doubt comes up. Somebody calls you out, they put you down, and doubt comes up. Now I have this doubt and I'm questioning myself. Maybe I did do something wrong. So now I'm starting to feel like I'm being accused, and maybe that accusation might be justified. So let's drill into that. What would happen if that were true? What if I was being accused? What if it was justified for some reason? How is that a problem for me? Well, if I'm accused, then there's a big trust issue, and I really put myself out there as an honest person, and if I'm not trusted, oh, there's something even deeper in there. Something about trust. Something about really wanting to be trusted because I feel like I am being honest. I feel like I'm doing my best. But then that doubt kicks in. Maybe I'm not doing my best. Maybe I'm putting out bad information that's causing harm to people. All from one person's comment. One person can put you in a downward spiral of self-doubt and lack of trust in yourself and lack of faith in your abilities and lack of faith in your skills. All from one person that puts you in that self-initiated downward spiral of feeling insecure, unworthy, incompetent, or not confident. All of the insecurities that maybe you thought you dealt with or maybe you're still dealing with, because when something like that happens, your insecurities might kick in. Even insecurities that you weren't aware of, because somebody is calling them out and putting them on the table and showing you, hey, this might be you. Or they might say, this is you. And you now have to figure out if that's true. But instead of jumping into knowing it's not true, you jump into, what if it is true? So I think it's important to take yourself on this journey of drilling in and drilling down. And it's interesting how I just kind of went through this with you in real time, where somebody said, I hate you. And it really led to a trust issue for me. And that may not even be the deepest part of this. Let's just say, let me drill in even further. Let's just say that it was a trust issue. Let's just say that they didn't trust me. And now I have to deal with that. How is it a problem that they don't trust me? Well, if they don't trust me, then I feel like I'm not liked. I feel like I'm alone. I do feel unloved. I do feel like I'm not part of something bigger, maybe part of a family or part of being accepted. Now I feel like I'm being left in the ditch alone to fend for myself. Now I'm starting to experience a more primal feeling of fear. There's some sort of fear kicking up in me. If I'm not trusted, that means I'm not liked, I'm not loved, I'm not accepted in the group, in my social circles, in my family. And if I drill even further than that, if I go even deeper, how is it a problem that I'm in the ditch left to fend for myself and nobody loves me? I feel like I'm completely alone, I have no resources, and I'm pretty much gonna die. I went from somebody telling me they hate me to feeling like I was going to die. And I did that verbally with you to take you into the drill down process, because this is how you discover what triggers you. I mean, a lot of this is how you get into your triggers, but to discover what triggers you, you catch it in the moment and then you drill into that so that you can discover what you are really hurt by or offended by or what you're afraid of, which will help you discover if you really should be hurt, afraid, or offended. Because what ends up happening is that you discover these deep down understandings of yourself, that when you are able to open yourself up and see what's inside, you might realize that there's really no reason to be triggered in the first place. Now, you might still be triggered after you discover all of this, but instead of dealing with a person telling you they hate you, you might have to deal with a fear of not being accepted. You might have to deal with a fear of not being loved, a fear of being alone, or whatever fears come up for you, if it's a fear at all. But it usually is a fear. It usually is a fear. And just to put a cap on everything I just said, I will even go further. I will drill down even further than that, than where I ended up, which is I'm afraid I'll die, and ask myself, okay, let's just say I died. How is that a problem? Where do you go when I say that? When I say that to myself, suddenly the problem goes away. Now, I'm not saying, you know, you die and that's how you fix the problem. I'm saying when you try this in your mind, when you go past the problem that the ultimate fear might be the fear of death, at least in this case, what would happen if death occurred, you know, bringing yourself into the worst case scenario? How do you feel after that point? And when you do this in your mind, you bring yourself past the box that you've created for yourself that you're always thinking in. Does that make sense? When you are thinking inside the box that you've thought in all your life, and you take yourself outside of that box, and the box contains the origin of your emotional trigger, which might be the fear of something big, or the fear of death, or the fear of something else, when you push yourself past what's in the box, you get to find out if the fear is still there. So I pushed myself past this box of thinking that I'd been in the whole time and asked myself, okay, inside the box of thinking, I have this fear of death. What do I do about that? Well, what would happen if I did die? What would happen if death came and I had no choice? Where do I go with that? Well, suddenly my problems don't exist anymore. And when I put myself in that frame of mind, then somebody saying, I hate you, really doesn't matter. Because I went to the origin of what I feel and beyond my biggest fear, and suddenly the words, I hate you, really don't have any meaning anymore. I'm not saying it's super simple to do this. I'm not saying that you'll figure out every emotional trigger that comes your way and suddenly you feel better, but it could happen. It could definitely happen. And I'm also not talking about taking your own life. That's not that at all. Because you can do this stuff in your mind and get to the point in your mind where you feel better. Because we usually don't go past what I like to call a boundary or a threshold inside of ourselves that takes us beyond our deepest fear. If we take ourselves beyond our deepest fear, our deepest concern, we break through a wall, usually the wall of the box where all our thinking takes place, and we discover a new feeling on the other side of that wall. Because we're taking our thinking beyond the box of thinking that we usually think. I hope this isn't confusing, but it's how I think. It's where I go with it. This is why when an emotional trigger comes up for me, I take it to the deepest, darkest places and break through whatever's there and realize that these are all self-imposed, self-initiated fears that when I get past the limit of my thinking and go even further, sometimes the emotional triggers disappear by themselves. So that is the deep answer to your simple question, how do I figure out what my emotional triggers are? I hope that helps. I'm going to read the second part of your email right now. It says, also, thank you for your advice from a posting that I made on one of your posts about infidelity. I found a therapist who answered the three questions you suggested in a way that made me feel that she would be the most helpful. She is helping me deal with anxiety regarding my husband's affair, and he and I are working to repair our marriage. I appreciate all the information you deliver. You are welcome, and I'm sorry you had to go through this with your husband, and I hope everything works out in the best way possible and you find healing. And just because you mentioned it, and I wasn't actually prepared for this, but just because you mentioned it, I'm going to tell everyone else what those three questions are, because I do remember this comment. She said, I need to find a therapist that deals with what I'm dealing with, but how do I find the right one? So I remember giving her the three questions, and I'm going to pull up that article right now and find those three questions. Hold on one second. It's called Surviving Infidelity, an Overlooked Warning Sign and Healing After the Cheating over at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And here's her comment. She said, I'm in the shoes of one of the ones who was cheated on, and I'm having major trigger issues. This explains her question today. I can't even watch movies or TV shows where a couple has any romantic involvement, as it brings up thoughts of my partner with another woman and I feel physical pain. I'm thinking of seeking counseling to overcome this. Do you have any recommendations of what type of counselor to try or what questions I might ask a therapist to ensure they are the correct one to help me? So, yes, that was the question on that article, and I replied, as for the type of therapist, I think you're going to find that nearly all of them have dealt with infidelity of some sort. Those who specialize in marriage and relationships might be a good start. But I think some good questions to ask might be the following. One, this one's pretty obvious. Do you work with victims of infidelity? Two, do you prefer to save the relationship or encourage a different path? And three, is there a way out of the obsessive thinking or am I doomed? Those are the three questions. If you need to heal from infidelity, those are the three questions I suggest you ask. And there's a specific reason I suggest you ask two and three. Number two, do you prefer to save the relationship or encourage a different path? I think it's important to know what the therapist has in mind. I believe that it's important to consider all options. You could choose to save the relationship or you could choose a different path. I believe a good therapist will guide you down the path you want to go. Not the one they want you to go, the one you want to go. And I wrote my reply. So if they answer, it depends if you want to stay in the relationship or not, I told her that's a good start. If, however, they say, I always encourage working on the relationship or something similar, I think you're going to be in a situation that has bias, and that may or may not work out for you. I mean, it could work out great, but if they already have bias, again, I'd be wary. Number three, is there a way out of the obsessive thinking, or am I doomed? I think that's an even more important question, because your memories are your trauma regarding the infidelity, and you need to know if the therapist can work with you on this. Every time you see a visual, you feel a certain way. You need to get to the point where the visual doesn't trigger the pain. And I told her, I'm willing to bet that you think about the visuals often, and that's what I mean by obsessive thoughts. Ideally, a therapist is going to be able to describe what you're going through without you saying much at all. For example, you're probably feeling a lot of PTSD, and every time you think about it, it's like your heart being ripped out. If a therapist says that to you, they probably understand what you're going through. They may not know the exact words to describe your feelings, but they're going to be close. So that was my answer to her, and this is her writing back, when was this? Several months after she wrote that question on that article, and I'm sharing it with you because she asked it. It's really not the topic of today's episode, but I wanted to share it with you because I like to cover as much as I can and try to get to every part of the question that people ask. Thank you for writing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'll be right back with another quick question, and then we'll end the show. So be right back after this. So what do you do between all the times that you're working on yourself? What about when you want some downtime? What do you do when you are healing and processing and you just need to give your brain a break? You know, it could be that overwhelmed brain. If it's overwhelmed, play the Match 3 or casual mobile puzzle game called Best Fiends. You know, I'm going to make an admission here. I started playing video games when I was 10, so that was like 1980. The Atari came out, and I got hooked, and it really did help through some of my rough childhood. It might be odd to hear that a video game was helpful through the rough times, but for me, it was that escape that I needed. I'm not saying Best Fiends is your escape, but I am saying that it can be therapeutic. It can be therapeutic to unplug from one thing that could take a lot of work and plug into another thing that gives you a feeling of freedom. And puzzle games are a great way to do that. Best Fiends is one of those puzzle games that you won't be able to put down. It's got over 100 million downloads, and it really allows you to play this game anywhere, casually, in line at the store, or waiting for meat at the deli. That's what I do, unless you're a vegetarian. That doesn't apply, but I highly recommend you check it out. It's Best Fiends, like friends without the R. You get to solve tons of fun puzzles with just the right amount of challenge and strategy involved. And it's way more fun than smashing candy over and over. If you know what I mean. And if you don't, then you gotta try it. You gotta try it. When I pull it out whenever I'm just sitting there waiting. I can't meditate everywhere I go. Sometimes I'm just waiting, and sometimes I just need to play. I want you to check out Best Fiends. Download the 5-star rated puzzle game Best Fiends for free today on the App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. All right, welcome back. I'm going to read you one more message here, trying to fill the show with as much content as possible, try to hit every angle of every single thing that ever happens in life. Wish me luck. This is another relationship question, actually, but it has to do with someone who was hurtful or emotionally abusive toward someone they cared about. I'm not going to read you the whole email. It said that this person knew a woman that broke up with somebody, so him and her became friends. And then he thought that they were eventually going to go out, but then she started dating someone else, and he became passive-aggressive because he thought that he should be the one that she would pick. So he felt a constant feeling of rejection, and you know, he took care of her in a lot of ways. And then he said he was pulling away emotionally, and I guess they were living together, and he eventually moved out of the house, and he started feeling better. We hung out a few times, and it led me down the same path. So we stopped communication for many months. And the kicker is we all work at the same place, so we can't avoid seeing each other. We talk here and there, but now the friendship is very badly damaged. I want to tell them I'm sorry for the times I was hurtful, but I don't know if it's better to just let things be and try to move on from it or not. I love your show and the work you do. Okay, thank you so much for sharing that. And the question I'm getting from you is, hey, I hurt someone, and we went back and forth, and I hurt them again, and we work together, and I see her all the time, so is it better to just kind of let things go and let things play out the way they need to be played out, or should I actually say something? Should I say I'm sorry? This is reminiscent of a message that I just got yesterday for the Healed Being program that I do. If you're not familiar with that, it's for the emotionally abusive person that wants to change over at healedbeing.com. People who join that program actually get the what I call the Q&A lessons. And one of the questions, Q&A, questions and answers, one of the questions was had a lot of similarities to yours about, should I say I'm sorry or should I let it go? Should I just let things play out the way they are? So I responded in one of those Q&A lessons. And what I said to that person was that if you choose to apologize, you must do so with zero expectation of a response. You must do so also with zero strings attached. Because there's a difference between apologizing to someone and asking for forgiveness, like, hey, I'm so sorry, do you forgive me? Because that's an expectation. It's a string attached. And saying it without asking for anything. For example, hey, I just wanted to let you know that I realize how much pain I caused, how much trouble I was, and I want to apologize about that. I'm really sorry. You don't have to say anything. It's just been on my mind, and I realize what a jackass I've been. I realize that, and I'm sorry. I just want to let you know that. And then go away. Walk away. Don't expect a response, and don't follow up. Don't go back and say, hey, did you think about what I said? Zero strings attached, 100%. No expectations. Because as soon as you put an expectation on it, it can be seen, and maybe rightly so, as a manipulation. I'm not saying that you would intentionally want to manipulate, because some people, they want to know if they were forgiven or if all is well now. That doesn't matter. What matters is you get it off your chest and say your part, and what you're doing is you're passing the baton. Or what I like to say, the ball is in their court now. You whack the ball over there, it's in their court. Whether they choose to hit it back or let it go or whatever they want to do with it, it's their ball now, and they can do whatever they want with it. And if they choose to never, ever do anything with it, you need to be okay with that. Maybe not okay, but at least accepting. At least accepting of them responding or not. So I hope that makes sense. That's all I have for you. If the idea of apologizing is on your mind, you must do it with no expectations and no strings attached. Do not look for forgiveness. I know that might be against what some people say, but being forgiven isn't the goal. The goal is to get it out of your system and say what is meaningful to you without putting them on the spot to forgive you or say it's all forgotten, don't worry about it, say it's water under the bridge. That doesn't matter. If they choose to say that, that's up to them. But don't look for it. Don't wait for it. Just say your piece and move on. So this is where I go with this, is if you feel like you can't get it out of your mind and it's on your conscience, then maybe you should. Maybe you should just go up and say, you know, I was passive aggressive. I was hurtful. I was very unfair to you. And I apologize about that. And that's all I want to say. I'm just sorry. I realize now what I did, and that wasn't right. So I just want to tell you that. Thanks for listening. And then walk away. And mean it. I mean, don't do this as a manipulation, thinking that, okay, now they're going to come back and say, hey, what you just said, that could come up in your mind, like, oh, they could say something. Yes, absolutely. But don't put it out there in your own mind. Like, don't say, I'm doing this because I want a response. You want to do this because you feel like it's the right thing to do for you. And saying your part gives them an opportunity to say their part if they have a part. And if they don't, that's fine too. At least your job is done. You are clearing your conscience because you feel bad about something you did. So that is where I go with that. I hope that helps. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you. Thanks for tuning into another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I hope this episode has been informational, educational, and it allows you to improve some area of your life. Even if it's a tiny little step forward, at least it's a step forward. When we come back, I'll say my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our sponsors today, BetterHelp. Go to betterhelp.com/brain and get 10% off your first month of their excellent service. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/brain. And I also want you to download Best Fiends for free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. And I also want to thank our financial backers of the show. They are the TOB patrons. These are the patrons of the week. I read you the names every week of people that are supporting this show, and I very much appreciate it. I am so grateful for the following: Lucy, Veronica, Holly, Monica, Larita, Leela, Adriana, Julia, Anna, Vanessa, Chelsea, Deborah. Good to see you again, Deborah. Linda, Christy, Maud. Good to see all of you. Thank you, patrons, for your support. I appreciate you. And if you find value in the show and you'd like to give back, visit moretob.com. You can choose to give a single one-time donation or give your monthly support, and you'll also be in the patron program if you decide to become a patron. I give back with private episodes, worksheets, and even a video archive, so check it out over at moretob.com. And if you remember a long time ago at the beginning of this episode, I talked about my podcast, Love and Abuse. Go to loveandabuse.com. If you are in any type of relationship that you find difficult and maybe even emotionally abusive, whether it's romantic, platonic, or family, if you leave many conversations feeling bad, find out if you're being emotionally abused by checking out Love and Abuse over at loveandabuse.com. And I also mentioned healed being. If you think you're the difficult person, you're the hurtful one, you are being emotionally abusive, maybe it's time for a change there as well. If you want to change that behavior, head over to healedbeing.com and sign up for that program. It is life-changing. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And I'm going to read you one last message. It is a message-packed show today. Hi, Paul. I hope my email finds you well. I was listening to the episode on the 18th of October, 2020, about feeling crazy when we don't have the answers. It was a wonderful episode, and it really got me thinking in a way that makes me think that maybe I should be qualified before I ask the man who broke up with me why he did so. I emailed you earlier this year that the man I was dating broke up with me and gave me no reason for the breakup. I thought that I had found my soulmate, but I was shocked. I wasn't looking for answers, and I thought I was doing well working on myself. Coming back to now, I got my answer. I decided to do what I kept putting off, which was look for it. And there it was, staring at me. He's now married, within 6 months of our breakup. We'd been together for 2 years. He remarried again. I'm going to work on this because, as I gather from being an ardent listener of your show, I am addicted to working on myself. Listening to your show and working on myself has blessed me with such beautiful tools to fall back on and save myself. I will survive this and get stronger. I'm glad I don't have to carry around false hopes and beliefs, and I also have the answer to the question, what comes out of you when someone says no? What came out of me was productivity, and I'm very thankful to you for encouraging this constantly and drilling it into people's heads like mine, which gets stuck in a rut time and time again. Thank you so much, Paul, for everything that you do and for being awesome. Warm regards. Thank you so much for warming my heart. Your regards are very warm. Thank you for your words. I'm sorry you had to deal with that, and I'm so glad that you do have tools and resources to get through this. And what you're getting through is your thoughts. You're getting through what your brain is doing to you. That's why I call this the overwhelmed brain. We overwhelm ourselves with thoughts that aren't productive. There are people listening right now that are having very unproductive thoughts. You know, your email was about being productive. You got productive, whether from listening to the show or learning stuff on your own or figuring stuff out. You got productive. That's where you went. You decided to get productive. That's a fantastic place to be, and it's a lot better than dwelling in the past. If you have any obsessive thoughts and you dwell on those thoughts, you have to listen to my episodes on obsession. You have to. I mean, it's required. I did so much introspection and reflection and meditation on obsession that if you are obsessed about any thoughts, about any person or anything in your life, go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Type in the word obsess, just the word obsess, because you're going to find variations of the word obsessed, obsession, and such. So just type in the word obsess, O-B-S-E-S-S, and you will be presented with some very important work. Yes, I'm saying this. I'm patting myself on the back. Not that I think I'm the best, but I just believe that the tools that I've presented on those episodes and in the articles that I've written are very effective, and I've gotten feedback from others saying, thank you for these articles, thank you for these episodes, because they have changed my life. I do not obsess anymore. Obsession is one of the hardest things I've ever had to tackle and I've ever had to deal with. The people that I've worked with, the people that have written to me, that have had obsessive thoughts, no matter what I tell them, I could tell them the exact answer on how to get out of their obsessive thinking. It is so hard for them to apply it. That's why I came up with these resources. If you have trouble applying anything about your obsessive thoughts, listen to my episodes on obsession and apply them. If you don't apply them, well, that's a problem. You need to obsess about applying them. But I get it. I mean, I used to be obsessed. In my 20s especially, I would become obsessive. What is she doing? Where is she now? Who is she talking to? It was always about a romantic partner. What is she doing now? What is she telling her mom? What is she telling her therapist? So obsessed, so insecure, so possessive, so jealous. There's so many things that make up obsessive thoughts that you need to work on if you're in that state of mind. And I get it. There's some things that you can't stop obsessing about. I can think of a few things that I'm not going to mention because I don't want you to obsess about them, but I can understand how people get obsessed. I have been there. I know what it's like. And quite frankly, I'm sick of it. Not of you, of me. I'm sick of my own obsessive thoughts. This is one of those things, you know, when I have an emotional trigger, I want to open it up. I want to unwrap it. I want to break it down and drill into it. I want to get to the bottom of it. Just like an obsessive thought, I want to get to the bottom of it. This is the kind of work that I apply all my effort, all my energy into, just to make sure I cover every aspect of it to help you get through it and out of it. So I want to thank this person for writing and for sharing where she is. You know, there's probably some stuff we can talk about in this email too, like he got remarried again only 6 months later. What does that mean? It doesn't matter what it means. You can continue focusing on what he did and why he did it, but it doesn't help you at all. What's a good answer? Is there ever going to be a good answer for something like that? I had someone leave me and they were married within 2 or 3 months. It was a long relationship and she left and married someone else. I thought, what the heck just happened? I was just blindsided by that. But I didn't want to obsess about it because I knew if I kept obsessing about it, I wouldn't get anywhere. I would continue being depressed because I was depressed at that time. I would continue focused on the wrong thing, looking in the wrong direction. You know that tiny little mirror in your car that you look in every now and then to make sure that there are no cops? They may not be you, but you know what I'm saying. If there's a cop behind you, you might tend to follow the speed limit and stuff. So you look in the rearview mirror, and of course you look in the rearview for other things. But emotionally speaking and obsessively speaking, that little mirror in your car isn't to be stared at. Yes, you can glance in it every now and then, but it's always about forward motion. It's always about moving in the right direction, going forward. And yes, you might have a thought that comes up that causes you to look in the rearview mirror, but if you stare at that rearview mirror and you're always looking in it, you're gonna crash into something. You're going to hit something. It's going to hurt. And it's going to affect you negatively. It's going to hurt. So you are hurting yourself by staring in the rearview mirror. And yeah, you could hurt others too. You could hurt people that really care about you because they may be with you. They may be in this ride with you. And you don't want to hurt them, of course. But my goal is to make sure that you're not staring in the rearview, whether you're alone, whether you're with somebody else. It doesn't matter. because you have to move forward. And the more you move forward, the more the future replaces the past. The more the present replaces the past too. But if you make the present about your past, you don't get the future you want. Maybe that's another quotable for your fridge. I appreciate you so much for tuning in today. Thank you for making it to the end of this episode. I think of all the people that stop halfway through and never hear the end and wonder if this was what they needed to hear today, but they decided to tune out. I hope that's not true, and maybe that's a little bit presumptuous on my part, but no matter what I do, what I always ask you to do every week, which is just keep an open mind, because you never know when that perfect thing will hit you at that perfect time that changes everything. By keeping an open mind, you get to step into your power. That's how you create the future you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.